Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, Dr. Tyler Callison. Hello, Tyler.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Let me tell the listening audience a little bit about you. So Dr. Callison is the co-owner of Callison Integrative Health, and he's a licensed acupuncturist specializing in sports medicine, injury recovery, degenerative conditions, and psycho-emotional health. He focuses on helping patients not only relieve pain, but also addresses the root cause of their condition to empower them in managing their health. He comes from a family of acupuncturists. He works alongside his wife, who is also a licensed acupuncturist and traditional Chinese medicine herbalist at their new practice location in La Jolla, California, where they treat a wide range of conditions. So welcome, Tyler.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. As I've told you, a lot of listeners to this show are young adults and my older adolescent patients, so I always like to ask people how they got involved in their career. So can you tell us a little bit about your early life?
Of course. So I have to say that early on, I went through a myriad of interests. I was the type of kid that wanted to be a chef. I wanted to be a landscape architect. I wanted to be a weatherman. I mean, it was really all over the place. But at a certain point, I realized that I had a very strong passion for medicine. And I can't go without saying that both of my parents are acupuncturists, that had a huge, enormous influence on me. So at the very least, I was surrounded by that being a normal thing growing up. For example, whenever I got sick, we would go over to the herb shop, and I would get my pulse taken, and I'd get a formula, and this was a very common thing. So moving forward, I took the pre-med route, thinking I was going to go to medical school, and I was very set on that. And at a certain point, I decided to major in medical anthropology, which is essentially the study of people through medical systems. And I did my specific research at the time on the doctor-patient relationship, as well as the education system in the modern medical field. And I loved it, but I came to a realization that nowadays it's less common, unless you're a physician with a private practice, to be able to see patients for very long at all. And I didn't like that. I saw the declining ability for physicians to be able to really connect with people. And I also was able to interview patients themselves. And they told me stories about how they just weren't satisfied with their care, largely due to the sort of disconnect that they had with their physician. And I think that's a systemic problem. I don't think physicians really want to have it be that way, but it kind of shook me. And so I graduated and and I reconsidered what I wanted to do. Then at a certain point, I had a, we'll call it an affliction. I was doing a volunteer job with a friend of mine, and I had to take some sick days off. When I came back, that friend was in a much higher volunteer position than I had started out. And for some reason, that just got me really jealous. And the moment that jealousy hit, I had this sudden back pain that was incredible, painful, and persistent. It did not go away. I think I had it for probably 2 weeks. And eventually I decided to go to a local TCM herbalist that I knew. And within about 3 days of taking his formulation, the pain went away. And at that point, I really started to reconsider something that was surrounding me for my whole life. And I did a little bit of research, and I found a new passion for it. And, you know, maybe a week later, I enrolled in acupuncture school, and here I am.
That's a cool story. I have so many questions. So you wanted to be in medicine because you wanted to heal people. What was the reason you were drawn to the medical field or healthcare?
I think that's a great question. It began with a general fascination of the human body. That has always been a big interest. I've loved biology. I love physiology. I love anatomy. And I also wanted to do something that I could interact with people, and I wanted to do something that I could use my hands. So even within medicine, I considered surgery or even osteopathic medicine with an emphasis on osteopathic manipulative techniques. So something along those lines. So it was a combination between the two.
And how did you, what sparked your interest in a doctor-patient relationship? That's not necessarily obvious to many people. They look at medicines, I'm going to fix the body, I'm going to learn about medications, procedures, but the doctor-patient relationship, that's sort of something that evolves in time for a lot of people. How come you had such an early interest in that?
You know, I think it's something that was innately important and obviously important in my understanding. And I think that had a lot to do with the interactions I had as a child and a teenager with medical systems, because to be honest with you, a lot of the medicine I received was Eastern medicine. And of course, there were many times I went to allopathic physicians. But even then, I had a really amazing allopathic physician who had a private practice, and I just thought he was the coolest guy ever. And so, and he spent a lot of time with his patients. And so I always thought that was incredibly important. And when I realized that not everyone has the experience of having a close relationship with their doctor, I felt it was important to study that.
You made the comment earlier that in medicine these days, a doctor-patient relationship is hard to develop because of the little time doctors get to spend with their patients. And I think in my career, which is now spanning to close to 40 years, I've seen the change from the time that doctors did spend in 45 minutes, an hour with each individual patient to running them through every 5 minutes. It's a very different kind of field now than it was even 30 or 40 years ago.
That's interesting that you say that. Yeah, I mean, I've here been in practice for about 4 years, and I hear stories from my patients. I love to hear that you, I find it very interesting to hear that you have seen that change over your career.
Yeah, it had to do with money and bean counters and people wanting medicine to make money as opposed to treat patients. And hopefully the pendulum will start swinging back as we... Because as you know, the medical field has not done very well in promoting good health, despite all of the modern developments. And part of it is I don't think we spend enough time with our patients. Hopefully,
I totally agree.
Sense will come back into the field. And then another thing you mentioned was the back pain you developed. Some people talk about body talk. Did the back pain say anything to you? Do you think the fact you had a back pain as opposed to a pain in the neck meant something?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm only really thinking about that now that you asked me this question. But if I had to interpret it, the body talk would be. I view the back, the low back, as a place of stability. And at the time, I had just graduated college, and I didn't really know what I was doing because I dropped the idea of going to medical school. And I had a sense of being lost and being pretty unstable. I think I've always really known what I wanted to do to some extent, but that was a point in my life where I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And when I saw my friend, ascend so quickly when I was absent, it just hit something in me that made me feel, kind of lost and stable and a little bit worthless, I suppose. And I think the low back is an interesting thing because it's a place where, structurally speaking, we carry a lot of our weight. The lumbar vertebrae carries most of the weight of the upper body, and that happens to be the place where people tend to get bulging discs and things like that, and there's a reason for that, because it bears a lot of the weight. And so, psychologically speaking, I think it could have hit my low back because I felt very unstable at that moment.
Interesting. So then you decided to go towards the field of acupuncture, and I'm guessing that's because that was a world you knew about, or is there another reason you chose acupuncture?
Yeah, so I think just to clarify, the world of acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine is really the same. It comes from the same place. And so when I say I was treated by the herbal formulations, and I went to acupuncture school, we learned both acupuncture and herbal medicine in the same place. So it was really that one of the same thing for me. And so, yes, it was because it helped me so much in that moment and because I was very familiar with it.
So can you give us a primer? What is acupuncture? What does this mean? What do you do?
So that's a really big question, and it could offer a huge answer, but I'll try to be clear and simple about it, because I think that's the most digestible. So acupuncture is a modality, and a modality just means that it's a set of tools used to do something under a specific paradigm. And the paradigm would be Chinese medicine. And so Chinese medicine would be comparable to, let's say, allopathic medicine or Western medicine. It's just a different way of looking at the body. And so acupuncture is the tool, kind of like how a surgeon would use a scalpel, to do a job. And so under the modality of under the paradigm of Western allopathic medicine. So acupuncture is just simply that. And so what we're using is we're using very thin, single-use, solid needles, otherwise known as filiform needles, and we are using those needles as tools to stimulate a reaction in the body by placing them in very specific locations that we know as acupuncture points, along what we know as acupuncture channels. And by doing that, we are able to facilitate some kind of electrical, biochemical, energetic response.
What's acupuncture used for? What's it useful for?
So commonly, people know it to be used for pain. And that is really, that's a kind of my bread and butter. I mean, we'll get into the details of that. I treat so much more than pain, but it is incredible for pain, and not just pain, but dysfunction. So I'll just give you an example, because pain can be caused by so many things. But if someone was having, let's say someone was having pain due to really tight muscles. That's a very simple example. Acupuncture could be used to release the tight muscles, and by doing that, it puts less pressure on, let's say, the nerves, and that would modulate the pain. Or if someone was having chronic pain and it was not due to tight musculature, acupuncture has been shown to be very useful in modulating how our brain understands the pain. So now we're talking about a little more of a chemical electrical response rather than a physical mechanical response. So there's that. But acupuncture has been shown to be effective for so many other conditions. I also specialize not only in pain injury sports medicine, but chronic degenerative conditions because of its ability to modulate inflammatory response, as well as psycho-emotional conditions because of its ability to sort of regulate the nervous system. And, of course, there's so much more that goes into it. There's the way that I interact with the patients, and there's, you know, all these things. But that's just a taste. I think to summarize, acupuncture really is quite useful for many conditions.
How does it modulate inflammatory response? What does it do?
It's actually able to down-regulate the response that the body will incur. So, first of all, I should say, inflammatory response is good. Generally speaking, we don't want to get rid of inflammatory response because that's how the body cleans up damage, right? But the issue it happens when there's too much. So like a really basic example would be if you sprained your ankle and it became very swollen, very hot, very immobile, right? So the body's basically pumping a lot of fluid into the area in order to clean things up. The issue occurs when the swelling gets to be too much, and that could cause local damage, right? And so acupuncture has been shown to be able to sort of down-regulate that hyper-inflammatory response. Another example, I use acupuncture a lot for more chronic degenerative conditions, like arthritis. And so that is an inappropriate inflammatory response because the body is constantly degenerating. And so acupuncture is sort of able to locally down-regulate the harmful inflammatory response that's happening. And the mechanism, it seems to be pretty complex. I mean, there's a lot of really amazing research. And I will say that the way I approach treating patients is both from a classical traditional way, where we incorporate theories of classical Chinese medicine, and a scientific way. And there's many times that I look at things from either one or the other.
Fascinating field. So I've talked to acupuncturists before who tells me that the intent to heal is key to the success of acupuncture. Can you comment on that?
So you said that they commented that the intent to heal is what attributes to the success of acupuncture. Is that what you said?
What I understood was that intention is key for it to working. So if you put the needles in the same place without intending to heal, you get a different kind of response from the patient, is what I understood.
Yeah, That's interesting. That's actually something I've thought about a lot in the past couple of years, because I used to not really believe that intention had anything to do with effectiveness of a treatment. And I think just over the years and observing and kind of seeing and talking to other acupuncturists and what they've experienced, as well as people that I've learned from in my field, I would say intention is important. I mean, it's at least 50%. And why? I don't know if I could really answer why. But something that I'm pretty certain about at this point is that intention is important. And it could be as simple as focus. It could be as simple as, I intend to do this with this patient. The patient knows about it, and so we're both on the same page. It could be as simple as that.
Right. I think maybe after a break we can talk a little bit about healing and intention when it comes to play with the placebo effect, because intent also is part of that. And I think a lot of, intention, I think, pervades all of medical care, including Western medicine, except that Western physicians aren't aware of it. But if you tell a patient, I think this medication will really help you, you'll get a different response than, let's see what this medication does, I'm not sure. And it has to do with the physician intent and the patient interpretation of that intent. So we'll be right, thank you for teaching us. I have so many more questions. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. Our special guest, Dr. Tyler Callison, the co-owner of Callison Integrative Health in La Jolla, California. Tyler's teaching us about acupuncture. We're talking about intention just before the break. We know in the placebo world that if you give somebody a placebo and even tell them it's a placebo, they can improve. And it's a complex reason they improve. This is like patients with depression or irritable bowel syndrome. And why would they improve if they know it's a quote-unquote fake drug? Perhaps because the act of giving something to someone, the act of receiving and taking someone from someone is healing. And I wonder if that plays a role in the efficacy of acupuncture.
I think that it plays a big role in the efficacy of every interaction in the medical field, acupuncture included. And, you know, something that I think about just as much as placebo is the idea of the nocebo, which is the opposite side. You know, if you think that something is going to work, it has a higher likelihood of working, that'd be placebo. But, you know, if you think that something is going to harm you, then that could also be true. And I find, especially recently, I have a patient who is going through some intense cancer treatment, and she was really unable to have frequent enough contact with her oncologist, and really disappointed in the fact that her oncologist would not communicate with her on some very important things and some very important questions that she had. And she kind of went into a little bit of a spiral, and when she finally heard from the oncologist, he said something like, don't worry, your condition has a, you know, like a 30% survival rate or something that maybe to him seemed encouraging, but after not talking to her for a long time, and then he said something so cold and it really hit her. And I notice every time I see her that is it's on her mind. And that kind of thing, when someone is in such a fragile state, can be really harmful too. So I think the mind is such a powerful thing. What we say as practitioners and what we do definitely has the ability to affect health outcomes.
I completely agree. And like you said, in my hypnosis world, intention and how we say things is critical as well. So I think you're right. It's throughout the healthcare field, but in Western medicine, we don't talk about it very much. And I think the healthcare field as a whole could benefit if people were more aware of the power of their words. So we talked about acupuncture. What is acupressure, and is that something people can apply to themselves?
Certainly, yeah. So I occasionally I will prescribe acupressure, especially when, let's say, people are traveling or they're going away from my care for a period of time, and I just want to give them something to do. Acupressure is good. It's great. You know, it's just using maybe a dull tool or your own fingers or thumb or, you know, whatever, to press on a point. And stimulation of the point that way is going to produce an effect. I think needles are generally a little bit stronger, only because they're penetrating into the tissue and they interact with sort of different kinds of tissue. But when you can't use needles, acupressure is great. And by the way, if I see children, especially children under, let's say, it's 10, 11 years old, I very rarely use needles. Most of the time, I'll use acupressure or something called contact needling, where I just place the needle on the skin. I don't penetrate the skin, and it still produces a great effect. Children actually have an incredible ability to pick up very small stimulus and run with it. So acupressure is great. It's a good tool, and it will still influence the body to do what an acupuncture point would do.
Now, is myofascial release anywhere in the same ballpark as acupressure, or is that something different?
I would say that that's different, because myofascial release would have more to do with working along the tendinomuscular region for some kind of injury or dysfunction. In acupressure, we're talking about acupuncture points. So I guess that's a good transition for me to talk about what is an acupuncture point. Do you mind? Can I
no,
go
please,
into that?
Please.
Okay. So a long time ago, it was found that these specific regions in the body have specific functions if you engage with them in a certain way. An acupuncture point, generally speaking, can range from the size of a quarter to the size probably of like a small pin. And engaging with these anatomical regions has a physiological effect. So the points themselves are small. I mean, you can think of it like a little well, like a little sort of energetic well that contains a lot of very specific nerves and sort of fascial lines. And when you engage with the point, it's a little bit different than releasing an entire tendinomuscular chain or fascial chain.
So, as I understand it, the reason, so the acupressure points, I understand the explanation. The reason I thought about myofascial release, which involves maybe placing your hand on a muscle area that calms down, is because you said earlier that acupuncture can cause muscle tension relief as well, but I guess it's a different mechanism, as you explained it.
Yeah, I know we have just a minute here, so I'll quickly explain that. Acupuncture needles release muscles because they interact with the fascia and the nerve. A finger pressing on a point has less ability to do that unless you're really putting tension on the muscle. So the intention is just a little bit different.
Got it. Well, thank you for teaching us so much. I have many more questions. We'll be right back after these messages. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest, Dr. Tyler Callison, co-owner of Callison Integrative Health in La Jolla, California. Thank you for teaching us so much about acupuncture. We talked about acupressure, but if I recall correctly, part of your training was also in herbal medicine, which is part of the Chinese medicine umbrella. Can you give us a primer on that? When should we think about that?
Of course, I'd love to. Herbal medicine is kind of like the pharmacopoeia, the pharmacy of the Chinese medicine paradigm. So going back to the metaphor that I used earlier, acupuncture is sort of the physical medicine. You're able to engage with muscles and nerves and sort of fascial lines and channels, and the herbal medicine is like the pharmacy. Chinese herbal medicine always utilizes, I say always, there's really never an always, but most of the time utilizes formulas or formulations. And this is a big difference between TCM and Western herbalism, because I find Western herbalism tends to use one herb for a function. The reason for formulas is way back when they realized that when you combine herbs together, A, they can produce a much more complex reaction for complex syndromes, B, Chinese medicine always, and here's an always, always looks at the body in a very holistic way. So even someone with a headache may get a different formula than another person with a headache. And when you're using multiple herbs, you can really customize it. And the third reason is because when you're able to combine herbs with different natures, you're able to also mitigate certain side effects of a certain herb and balance out the formula. So when would you utilize herbal medicine? Generally in my clinic, since I am primarily an acupuncturist, I will see the patient first, and if I think they need herbal medicine, then I'll refer out to my wife, who is an incredible herbalist. And those cases are usually when someone is either very weak, elderly, children respond really well to herbs, and sometimes it's a personal preference, too, for the patient. Sometimes they really don't want to get needles, and they would prefer to take something orally. I personally think acupuncture and TCM herbal medicine, they're a great complement. They can be done at the same time. Generally speaking, you can think of it like treating sort of internal medicine issues that you would typically maybe take a drug for. That would be a good chance to do some herbal medicine, right? We have patients that have hormonal issues. We have patients that have various psychological issues, gynecological issues, that's a really big field in Chinese medicine. Dermatological issues is a great chance to take herbs. And then acupuncture, though it can treat internal medical issues very well, I tend to see people mostly for musculoskeletal injuries. Yeah, believe it or not, from a lot of actually psycho-emotional issues. So to summarize what I just said, herbal medicine can be used for external physical problems, but I would say it's best for internal medicine problems. And acupuncture can be used for internal medicine problems, and it does very well. But I like to get people on herbs for kind of chronic internal medicine problems.
So you said earlier that, let's say for the same symptom headache, the herbalist may use different combination herbs based on patients' bodies. Can you give a specific example? Like what would the herbalist see in a patient that would make them give a different kind of herb for headaches, as an example?
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, we're getting into the nitty gritty here of diagnostic methods, but there's so many kinds of headaches. Just for example, since we're talking about headaches, right? We might consider, where is the headache? Is it on the top of the head? Is it a frontal headache? Is it a temporal headache? When does it happen? Is it a migraine headache? Is it a cluster headache? What's the sensation? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it heavy? You know, these are all things that we are trained to consider. And not only that, but what else is going on in this person? You know, how are they feeling emotionally? What is their diet like? Is this a headache coming from what they're eating? Is it coming from stress? Is it coming from muscle tension? You know, so there's so many factors. I could probably think of 10 or 15 different formulas off the top of my head that treat varying kinds of headaches.
So in TCM, do people, is it like, we're going to try this combination. If it doesn't work, we'll do another combination. I see that like in neurology, they'll try one drug, they'll try another drug. Is there a lot of that going on as well? You'll try different combinations, or is it usually the first couple of prescriptions work?
Well, first of all, diagnosis is important. As with any medicine, diagnosis is so paramount. So I find that if the diagnosis is correct, from the Chinese medicine theory and paradigm, usually the first formula works. Now, we're all human, and we're all practicing medicine. It's called practicing for a reason, not doing perfectly. So everyone makes mistakes. But if the diagnosis is correct, it will definitely improve the headache. And, you know, sometimes we get it wrong. So it could be the second formula. We'll try that, and it works. But again, the beautiful thing about herbal medicine and with acupuncture is you can really customize it. So if they're given a headache formula and it takes 80% of it away, but then they got some, you know, little minor upset tummy issues, then you just take something out or you add something and it's perfect.
So modern psychiatry is moving towards personalized medicine. Will that do genetic testing to see what kind of psychiatric drug might best work for you? Has anybody started studying personalized genetics medicine with blending with traditional Chinese medicine to find the right combination?
Wow, that's a really fascinating question. Not in my knowledge. I think because the personalization is built in to Chinese medicine, you know, it kind of already has that, but incorporating genetics would be so fascinating and so useful. I think that would just emphasize and build upon what we already have.
Yeah, because we're talking about marriage of Western world and Eastern world, which probably be really good for our patients, taking the best of both worlds. Imagine a future like that, where people have time to spend with their patients, too.
Absolutely. Well, there's a reason why I called my practice Health and Integrative Health, because I believe that the marriage that you just talked about is the future, and it is so important.
Love it. Well, when we come back, I'm going to ask you what tips you have for our listening audience that they can incorporate into their own lives to improve themselves based on your large experience over the last decade. This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest, Dr. Tyler Callison, co-owner of Callison Integrative Health in La Jolla, California. Tyler has taught us about acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine. We've talked about acupressure. And some of our audience, I hope, is intrigued and wants to learn more about acupuncture. So can you tell us, like, what does it take to train to become an acupuncturist?
Sure. So I think this is true for all acupuncture schools. They're the accredited schools here in the U.S. So you'll have to have either a bachelor's degree or enough background credit to satisfy, you know, their requirements. Most people come in with a bachelor's degree. And then after that, it is a four-year program at the master's or doctorate level. What I got was a combination of master's and a clinical doctorate. They sort of combined it within the 4 years. They phased out the master's only, so it used to be about 25 years ago a two-year program, and now it's more of a three-and-a-half, four-year program, which includes all your basic sciences. It includes your Chinese medical theory. It includes your, you know, all of the physiology and testing, and it includes a large amount of clinical time. My particular program had a clinic in the school itself, and it was a teaching clinic.
So how many hours of training do you get before you go out there and see patients?
Oh, I need to double check the number, but I think it's about a 3,500-hour program.
A lot of work. So I think it's equivalent to medical training from what you described.
It's pretty cool. Yep.
So I mentioned before the break, I was hoping you could share three tips that our audience can incorporate their lives today to enhance it. What would you suggest people do?
Well, I think this has just been on my mind recently, but probably the number one thing would be the fostering of slowing down and being present. Because I find that a lot of issues that people have are revolved around their mind being elsewhere. And this is a little bit, I think, of a Buddhist way of thinking, along with other thought schools. But I find that a lot of people come in either thinking all the time in the future or all the time in the past, and just not really being here and now. And a lot of my practice actually revolves around getting people to come back to themselves, to center, and realize that really the only thing that is right now. And when we can do that, it helps people a lot. And even if it's just an hour that they're with me in the clinic and we're talking and they're able to, you know, rest a little bit with the needles in and have some nice music, and do a little bit of meditation, you know, even if it's just that, it seems to be extremely helpful. So my number one right now tip would be to foster presence and the ability to disengage from your phone for a second, you know, disengage from things that are pulling you out of here, and then just kind of come back.
That's a great tip. You had another one for us?
Yeah.
Next
tip. I think, you know, the next most important thing, when I go over people's health, I keep it really, really basic. I often talk about the importance of sleep. Sleep is huge, and there is so much research coming out now to show how important sleep is, especially in fostering longevity in the long run, in diminishing things like Alzheimer's and dementia. And it's really easy to forego good sleep, especially when you're young. And you may not even see the damaging effects until you're older, but it does accumulate. So the ability to build good sleep habits is so important. It's going to help your mental health. It's going to help your cognitive function. And people have different reasons for why they don't sleep well, but that is a big piece that I work with in my clinic. The place that I generally start is an hour before you go to bed, just unplug. Try not to expose yourself to too much abnormal light, like coming from a phone or a computer. And listen to some music. You know, allow your body to slow down and ease into the sleep process.
So it's interesting. Both of your tips involving slowing down. One is living and being in the present, and that's next one is slow down and go to sleep, which is also a way of slowing down. I wonder what your third tip is going to be.
Right. So I think my third tip generally is a little more whimsical, but I always encourage people as well to get exercise. Again, I am so simple, Dr. Ambar. I am so simple because people forget the simple things. Be present, get good sleep, and then do a little bit of daily exercise. And I'm not an extremist. You know, I for the majority of people, you really don't need to spend 3 hours a day in the gym. You don't need to run a marathon. But people get busy. And so if you're able to get out
and get your heart rate going a little bit every single day, maybe a couple times a day. And even better, if you can find an activity that nourishes you, it nourishes your soul, makes you feel good, you're having fun, then it's a twofer, because then you're doing something that you will like to do. You're not just pushing yourself to go to the gym. You don't have to go to the gym. I mean, that's really not the only thing that's out there. Explore activities around you. You know, do something that is both fun and something that, you know, gets your blood pumping, that is so, so good for you.
I love it. So if you allow me to modify your first tip, which was to slow down to be present, to add, to include while eating a good diet. So if you have good diet and being slow and present, exercise and sleep, those are the three keys to good health throughout life, from adolescence through old age, that we've hit upon.
I absolutely agree. If there was a fourth one, it would go right to the diet and food. Yes, definitely.
Exactly. Tyler, thank you so much for spending this time with us, teaching us so much, and hope you inspired some future acupuncturists, because we could use a lot more integrative health healthcare providers and physicians and the like.
So thank you so much for having me on. Thank you.
This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.